Hi, and welcome to The Parent Equation with me, Aisha Murray, the podcast series where working parents share their unique stories of raising a family alongside their career. From complete career changes to parental rights, from IVF to single parenting, each episode is inspiring, and I'm so grateful to all my guests for being so candid. Parenting isn't easy, but we're all in it together. Welcome to this episode of The Parent Equation. Today I'm joined by Stephanie Ryan, another guest in the USA, so joining me very early in the morning. So thank you, Stephanie. Stephanie is a mum and a science educator. So we'll get into that a bit more about what exactly that means. And I guess the reason Stephanie's here today is to help us as working parents be more comfortable and confident in how we educate our children and use resources available to us and sort of feel like we can sort of take them on a journey without feeling like we can't do it. So welcome, Stephanie.
Thanks for having me.
So let's start off with science educator. What does that mean?
It means a lot of different things. I've had a journey to get where I'm at. So I originally started out in the research world in academia of how people learn different content areas. And I really liked how it applies to the other content areas, not necessarily just the teaching of it, but looking at the students and how are they misunderstanding concepts? What are some misconceptions they have? What are those mental models that when they tell you something and you just kind of stare at the kids, you're like, what did you say? And you're like, I don't understand, of really getting into that, of like what it was that they built that mental model on. And I ended up in the assessment and curriculum development world. And so I focus on science. I also do math, but mostly science. Science is my true passion. And I make these materials for people. And it's really rewarding. I get to make things that if a student misses a question, it's not just a gotcha, you know, that, oh, your math is wrong, but it's, you really misunderstood it in this way. And it's informative to the teacher and the parent of like what you need help with and how we might be able to move forward.
Okay. And do you do that on a self-employed basis or is for a large organization?
I have my own consulting company and publishing companies hire me to work on things like that.
Okay. So. Okay. And that really resonates actually with me because my oldest daughter, who's 11, is certainly no maths whiz. And it became quite clear, actually, the way she was being taught, as a traditional way at school, just wasn't resonating for her. It wasn't clicking because it is all kind of fairly linear. It's fairly kind of by rote, etc. Then when we got a tutor in for about 6 months who took a much more visual approach with her and much more as we have a sort of Montessori approach, so using creative and visual techniques and models and things, suddenly something just clicked. And she's never going to love maths, but She now understands it. She understands the concepts because the approach is so different. Is that something that you're, I suppose, trying to push forward?
Yes, definitely. But even a little more subtle than that. So what I really like to push with parents is that a lot of stuff you do in your house is actually math and science. And you can really focus on patterning and finding relationships between things, cause and effect. So you can find these things in your house and your kid can learn these things without you actually explicitly talking about it. Yeah. Maybe not for the 11-year-old math, but for toddler math, certainly.
And it just becomes such an ingrained part of life. And we talk about everything is based on math, isn't it? Or maths. Everything we do, every job we end up doing, potentially there will be, I was in marketing for a long time. And when I was working with data, that was maths, you know, and a good knowledge of maths gives you a really good footing. So how do you think then, talk about those examples, how can we start to embed that with the younger kids?
So one of my favorite examples, and if you follow me on Instagram, anybody, I have a lot of posts about this specific activity because my son requests it all the time. We do pattern per phase, and we use yogurt, granola, and then whatever fruit we have on hand, and you give each one of them a letter. And you think of a pattern you want out of those letters and you just keep repeating it until you run out of ingredients. Mm-hmm. And then you look at it and you're like, which ingredient did I run out of first? And thinking of how you can't actually repeat the pattern again because you're missing these ingredients. And then you eat it. Yeah. And that's why it's his favorite. But he'll wake up on Sunday mornings and he'll say, can we do parfait patterns? And he'll be like, let me get the Post-its. And I'm like, okay. And so last Sunday, I actually had a practice what I preach moment. And I was like, I am so tired. I really don't want to do this. And I'm like, but it's no different than me baking him breakfast. It takes 2 minutes to write down the letters. Yeah. And I can incorporate this without adding anything extra. I'm going to do it. And then I documented it to show other people, look, I am really tired and did not want to do this today. And we made it.
And having that reward is obviously the way forward.
Yeah, I find that using food in a lot of those situations is that are a challenge. So we made solar ovens out of pizza boxes, and you can make s'mores that way. And so you're talking about there's some science and there's ratios, but it's also a challenge, and you've solved an engineering problem. And it's just the science, it doesn't feel like you're in the classroom. Yeah. And that was a huge misconception I had as a parent, even of when the lockdown happened. So ours wasn't in the US. It was definitely by area. And our area only really shut down for a couple of weeks. But we have family who we felt, you know, we wanted to protect them. And so we pulled my son from pre-K. And I ended up becoming a pre-K teacher. And I thought of it like school, and it wasn't very fun. And my son and I kind of rubbed wrong a little bit over, like, he's like, I don't want to work on my letters. And I was like, I called this preschool teacher and I was like, how do you do this? Am I doing this right? And she was like, you guys work on your garden. And she's like, those are skills. And she was like, he's learning about water and how measuring and the life cycle of a plant. And she's like, you're really doing these things and it doesn't feel like it, but you are. And I was like, oh my goodness, this is so true. And so I just changed my outlook that it wasn't just like, let's sit at a desk and it's painful because that's the way school is. I made it more like activity based or what he wanted to do. And it just really helped.
And I think here we have evolved over time. This is pre-lockdown. The schools now, sending the school my kids are in, they have forest school, the first sort of few years of being a school where they're, I can't remember how many hours a week it was, but they're taken out of the classroom into their forest school, wherever that might be. If they're really lucky, they have a really good space to do that in, or any smaller spaces or allotments they can find. And they actually are outdoors. They have stories outdoors. They work with gardening stuff. They're looking at insects, all that kind of stuff. And that didn't exist when I was at school. So I think all of that understanding that actually school doesn't have to, school work doesn't have to happen in a classroom is definitely evolving, I think, anyway.
Well, and I think, too, it's their understanding is going to be better than ours. So I came out of school memorizing things. Yeah. And so I can tell you equations. I can show you on the periodic table memorizing. But it took me a long time to be able to apply that and explain it, where I think kids who go through programs like that, instead of the way I did, they're more able to explain things and they might not have the fact memorized, but you can look a fact up. You can't, the explanation part is the hard bit. So if you can understand it, that's more important in my mind.
Yeah, and you can apply it then to real life. It actually becomes not just theory on a piece of paper. It becomes a real life practice that you can then just go out and use from day one. The thing, as you say, the way we were taught, we just memorized things. You couldn't then go out and actually apply that to real life. It didn't feel like it anyway.
Yeah, I have my husband, he's not a scientist, he's a science enthusiast, and he asked me a question and I answered it while we were dating, and I said, oh, you know, PV equals NRT, and he's like, yeah, but what does that mean? Can you explain what is happening in this situation? And I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't. And so I had to in the way that I write curricular materials, sometimes there are days where you have to reteach yourself something from this lens of like, wow, I really wish I would have learned it this way.
Yeah, what does it actually mean? My husband's doing a real estate course in how to invest in real estate. So just on the side to see what the future might hold for us. And it was all about supply and demand and price elasticity. And there was a page of equations, just a page of equations, P1 equals something over something. And it didn't mean anything because, okay, that's fine. What does price elasticity actually mean? What does it mean in real life? What context is there in? How can I apply that to when I invest in real estate? But just a bunch of numbers, and he's not a mathematician, just threw him off. So we had to kind of unpick it and say, why are we doing it this way and the reasons behind it, rather than just memorize this equation. So I think hopefully, as you've said, that being able to understand something and explain it gives you that different lens to actually, for kids anyway, get it to be really embedded in their minds.
Yeah. Well, and they say that we're not training kids for jobs that they are currently here. Mm-hmm. So like we're training them for something we don't even know it exists mm-hmm. later. And I think it's better that we're training them to ask questions, to support their evidence, to keep trying when things don't work and things like that. So I think the facts don't matter as much. And I may be alone in some places like that, but there's definitely a camp of people. The facts, they don't. I'm not saying facts don't matter. And if you're going to be a chemist, you need to know these facts. But if you're just a general citizen of the world, yeah, maybe you don't need to memorize all the elements of the periodic table. Maybe it would be more useful if you learned some of these concepts instead.
Yeah, absolutely. So speaking of which, then what is a solar oven?
So a solar oven would be using the sun to heat up something. Mm-hmm. And so you're essentially making a little greenhouse of your own by using the experiment is very, you can make it more green if you would like. So it usually uses plastic wrap, which is terrible. Yep. So I usually use, we have a laminator for a lot of the education stuff we do. Mm. So I use laminator packs that I haven't used yet. So I'm going to use them later. So it's just like a reuse of it.
Okay, yeah.
And you make like a screen for the window, the sun to come in, and then it heats it up faster than if you hadn't had that there because you've made a greenhouse.
Yeah.
And I'm in the process. I have decided I think it would be really cool to do a time lapse of this, of showing what happens, and then adding thermometers to set it up to show that if I have the plastic or if I don't, of what's happening, because you need that comparison point. Otherwise, it's just fun where you need the two, like, why is this happening?
Yeah, it's the cause and effect, isn't it, you need?
Yeah. But, you know, I guess my son turns 5 this week. My goodness. At 3, when I started doing this, he didn't need that extra level of explanation, but now he does.
Yeah. And then tell me, that must be similar to magnifying glass, I imagine, concept. Son and magnifying glass. And we used to try and set leaves on fire in the playground.
You know, I'm going to have to look this one up. That is a great thing to focus on in one of my videos. Like, why does that happen?
But just don't burn your school playground down.
Yeah.
Burning leaves. So tell me about life as a working mum then. So your son is at an age now where, as of any age pre 5 or 6, is a pretty intense time for any working parent. So how did you find life before parenting, and now having to incorporate being a working mum into life now? And then you have the lockdown, obviously, which we can talk about later. Maybe pre-lockdown.
Yeah, I would say before having kids, I was very driven. Mm-hmm. I'm still driven, just in a different way. But I was driven on what the next step was. And so I was always looking for my next promotion and leading teams and I traveled a lot. My husband and I, we actually had a date in an airport because we were both consultants and we had a layover in the same place. And we were like, oh, we're going to see each other today. There was a summer where I think I was in a different place every week and I always got the same seat on the airplane. And I remember thinking, when you get on an airplane and they announce where you're going, and I'm like, who doesn't know where they're going? And I realized it's people who travel a lot and they get the same seat every time. I was sitting there, I'm like, wait, where am I going? Is this a 3-hour flight or a 7-hour flight? So life was very different. And then we had my son. And we were actually over in London at that time. And we couldn't put him in daycare any earlier than 6 months. A lot of them wouldn't take him before that. We're here people take in the US. Mm. People go back to work after 6 weeks. So I ended up taking more of an extended leave than I had intended because of that. And I started doing things like part-time and easing myself back in. And then I really just started to enjoy this on this freelance approach to it of like, when I've got time, I will, but if my son is sick, I won't take things on and stuff like that. So it's been really helpful because I am able to, for our family, it makes sense that I'm the one who does pick up and drop off at school. And then that really just, that helps the way our family moves along. And it's more flexible. So I really like it, but I am still, I still travel sometimes pre-pandemic. And now we're not post-pandemic, but people are treating it that way. So I do still have some travel things, like I'm speaking on a campus in a few weeks. But I still do those. And I just rely a lot on my parents and my husband's parents to help out with that.
And how old was your son? So he was born in London, was he?
Mm-hmm.
And then how old was he when you moved back to the States?
He was almost two.
Okay. So you had a good couple of years. How do you, what's your view or experience of, I suppose, UK living, UK parenting versus US?
It's really funny because my mom told me I acted a little bit like an alien when I moved back. Like I was like, what is this? Because I was never a parent in the US before. I only had my experiences as a wife or a single person here. Like I didn't know. And so there are a lot of things that you can get at a pharmacy and talk to a pharmacist if your child is ill, or here you have to go to the doctor, or here there are things that are over the counter that I had to go to a doctor for in the UK. And so there's just, there's some things that I actually, my pediatrician sometimes laughs and she'll be like, you can get that. And she'll tell me what it is, or, oh no, you do need to see me. Like she laughs because it's funny. It's just such a different experience. But I really enjoyed the community aspect of raising a child in the UK, because we had all these, where are they? The community centers where there were activities and there were all these play groups and the parks. You had so many beautiful parks. And here everything's really individual. And it's, my son only sees other kids outside of daycare if we really put an effort in and it fits people's schedules, because people here, like, I don't know what, year students start playing soccer on teams, but my son's birthday party this weekend, most of his friends are on soccer teams and we had to work around that. And it's like, they're five. And it's just such a very different individualized society difference. So you really have to work at feeling like you're a community here.
Yeah, and it's a lot more, I mean, just a lot more spread out physically, isn't it, I suppose, compared to, I mean, London's a city, but it's pretty, you have villages within London. That's how I look at it.
Well, and here, the US is so big and our families are so spread out in some places. So we ended up moving back to Indiana, which is where we were both from, but it's not necessarily, it's not like a bustling place. We're in suburbia and it takes a while to get to Chicago or any big cities, and but our families are close, and that is what is so important. It's so helpful. So I can feel like I can go on a week trip and that my husband's not overwhelmed, or if he gets sick, who's going to watch my son while he can't be a daycare or things like that. Like I have backup, and that I did not have in London. That was hard.
Yeah. And it does make a big difference. And a lot of our friends who are from the US or from Australia or from wherever they're from, quite often when kids are on the horizon, that's when they start thinking, now I'm going to go back home. As much as they love living here and enjoying everything that London has to offer, or the UK has to offer, as soon as the kids become a factor and the childcare becomes a factor and the ridiculous nursery costs become a factor in London, especially, then that's usually the catalyst to send people back home to be near family.
Yeah, definitely. I think one of the real turning points for us was my son got pneumonia when we were in London and had to be hospitalized. Okay. And my husband and I both caught it as well. and we had to take care of him. We were exhausted. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I can't, I called my mom. It was the middle of the night. I'm in hospital laying on that little cot that pulls out next to the bed. Mm-hmm. And I call her and I'm like, could you come? And she's like, yeah, when do you need me? I'm like, there's a flight in 3 hours. Could you make it to the airport? And we got her a ticket and we got her on. And she just kept changing the end date until everybody was better. Mm-hmm. And it was like, okay, I think we need some help.
a bit closer than a however long 8 hour flight away. And then Stephanie, talking about lockdown and how that, I suppose, because one of the things we talked about before we recorded this was how you'd love more parents to be more confident, I guess, and comfortable in educating their kids. And we've all had to homeschool our kids as part of the pandemic. And as you said earlier, I certainly, and lots of my friends and colleagues, took it on in a way that was probably the wrong way, assuming that schoolwork at home was going to be terrible, was going to be stressful, we were going to shout at our kids, and that did happen. And it's like, well, I knew that was going to happen. So we kind of went into it feeling like it was, and we're not school teachers. Well, I'm not a school teacher. So from your point of view, what did you learn then through having your son at home? And you already alluded to it slightly, but how could we as parents be better longer term about actually educating our kids without this sort of fear, I suppose?
Yeah. So like I said, I called his preschool teacher and I was like, I can't tell if I'm doing this right. And she kind of like, you know, it doesn't need to be like school and you are doing the things I would do here. And she was like, so it doesn't need to be that. And it just like really clicked for me because it's like, what am I doing? I'm a chemist who teaches chemistry. Of course it doesn't need to be this way. What is wrong with me? You know? And I remember having this kind of epiphany moment where it was, if I just had a lot of trouble with this and I'm a science educator, I bet parents are really having a tough time with this. And so that's when I decided to start documenting all the stuff we did in our makeshift homeschool. Yeah. And I approached it from a way that I think parents would be able to do this. I looked at it in terms of themes. And so my kid, I would ask him, I would say, what do you want to learn about? And he'd say, like, I want to learn about bugs. And so we would start digging in the garden. We would find bugs. We would talk about differences between insects. We'd do a craft about bugs. I would find free online worksheets to print out to help him work on his letters and sorting and things like that. And cutting and gluing, these skills that he was missing from not being at school. Yeah. And he started to learn and he actually didn't look at it as like, oh, I don't want to do this. It was, what are we going to learn today? Mm-hmm. And it was like, okay, well, what do you want to learn next? And so I would schedule these out as themes. And like, the other thing I noticed was he was really missing out in that age group is costume play and pretend play. Yep. And that is not my forte. Like, I hate pretending. And when we pretend, he always tells me I'm pretending wrong. And I'm like, that's not possible. And so I thought about it and I was like, if he were in a classroom setting right now, they would have costumes and they would do pretend play. So what I decided, I went ahead and got costumes for different professions and we made themes about it. And so it'd be like, this week we're going to learn about astronauts, or we're going to learn about firefighters. And so I would find an experiment. We made a fire extinguisher, like a makeshift fire extinguisher, mind you. It wouldn't be very helpful, but it did the job of one flame. But things like that. And it was this problem for us to solve. It helped us understand something we really wanted to learn about better. And then it gave us a theme to like do really mundane tasks, like cutting and pasting or counting how many fire trucks there were instead of asking him to learn number theory. Like it was here, let's use this thing you're really geeked out about this week. And some weeks ended up lasting longer than others. Like he really was interested in space. So we did space for like a month, I think. I actually got tired of space for a bit there. I'm back to liking it again, but
there's a lot of space. If needed, there's a lot of space to learn about.
There is,
I think two things you said there actually really, I think that's what's important, themes, definitely. So breaking it down into themes that you can then create more content or lessons around, I think it's really important. And we use that in all kinds of marketing planning and content planning, use themes. So what's the kind of high level theme and how can you break that down? So that makes perfect sense. And the other one, which we always talk about with parenting and coaching, is communication. So actually asking your child what they want to do and what they want to learn about. So rather than pushing it on them and saying, this week we're going to do this, today we're going to do this. And then they go, oh, that's not, and then they're not in the right mindset, or that's not really what they're thinking about. Actually including them in that planning, I guess, really worked for you.
It did, yeah. And so now he actually feels comfortable. I mean, we had him home for 15 months. We did a very long lockdown. We did I don't want to call it a proper lockdown, but a proper lockdown. Mm-hmm. And we had a lot of time. So if there was something that he wanted to try, it was like, I mean, I've got all the time in the world. Let's go for it. And I want to make sure that people know that we didn't just learn all the time. We definitely popped on Disney Plus and Pixar movies and things. But what I did try to do, because I am me, I am an educator at heart, is we would still deconstruct what we did or do an activity that went along with the movie, or we only picked movies that had themes. So like for Inside Out, we used water beads and we made our own emotions.
Oh, yeah.
And we talked about like good days, bad days, and helped work through that. And I just think that really tying it in instead of having them just sit and watch. Like, I had a hard time putting him in front of the screen as much as it needed to be sometimes, but sometimes you had to. Yeah. But I found that a lot of this is very educational content that's out there, and it helps them see their world in a different way. So especially kids who aren't around other kids right now, like he's an only. And so he was able to like really look about interpersonal friendships and things of like, wow, Woody really wasn't nice to Buzz. And I can see why Buzz was upset, you know, and like really working through that. And it's like, I had no idea that I would be using Toy Story in that way.
But it seems like, now you said it, it seems like an absolute no-brainer to use, to extend the knowledge and extend the film, for example. So like you, we're not massive screen time, not big screen time family anyway. So when we do have to use it, which we have to use it a lot more, it didn't sit right. And then the holidays, we're on summer holidays now, so another 8 weeks off school anyway. And again, it's what can we watch, what can we watch? But what you've just said is an epiphany for me, thinking actually, yes, you can watch the film, but we can extend that learning outside of the film and bring it to life more. And you said use examples like you just used for Toy Story or for Inside Out, rather than just sitting glued to a screen for 2 hours and then that's finished. Then do you know whether they have anything like that officially to download, as in use the films? Like, because I think if there isn't, there's a massive gap in the market for you there.
I think that if you look on Instagram or Pinterest, you'll find a few where people do that. So I've posted the ones when I do that, that there was an actual activity. But yeah, you're right. I think I could do a few posts about that, that are like the questions you can help ask. Because that was something that parents reached out to me that they didn't know what to ask. So things that really felt natural to me to say, like, you added baking soda to vinegar, ask the kid what's inside the bubble. Like, a lot of parents who weren't scientists didn't think that question next. And so that's when I kind of switched gears a little on my page and I started adding, you could ask this, or I asked him that. And then I also started highlighting my mistakes, because I have a friend who I went to college with. She messaged me and she said two things. I hope, please tell me that you sit and drink a cup of coffee and pop him in front of a TV at least once. Like, because I feel like a bad mom that I'm not doing all of this. And I was like, oh no, this is a curated space. Like, you're only seeing the good parts, obviously. But then I had parents saying, like, mine didn't turn out this way. Yeah. And I'm like, you know what? I need to show you that my first seven times, this tipped over, and that's okay. So I started showing some bloopers or giving pro tip. Don't do this. I made the mistake, you know. And so showing parents that it's not going to come out right the first time every time, and that's okay. And so you can even talk about the mistake. Like, look, mommy made a mistake. How can we fix this?
Yeah.
And just normalize that as a part of going through stuff instead of just always assuming things are going to turn out picture perfect. And that is not the attitude or anything that I want to put forth.
No, and I had best intentions last week or week before to make pizzas with the kids from scratch, to give them a whole afternoon of activity and food at the end. And in my head, this picture perfect outcome was going to happen. And actually, it was an absolute disaster because they fought over the flower, which went everywhere. They just weren't sharing very well at all. Then the pizza dough was supposed to be rubbish and then didn't rise, didn't crisp up in the oven. So we ended up with these pretty horrible looking pizzas, which were not inedible, but not far off inedible. The kitchen took about 2 hours to clean and they were just pissed off at each other. Oh, great. The whole sort of 5 hours.
And that makes
of my
you
life.
Not want to try. Like, yeah, because you're like, oh, it was supposed God. To turn out like this. Exactly. And so, like, I try to do time lapses too to show, like, I'll do a fast forward of everything we were doing. And you can see that I did a lot of it. And he's running around like crazy in the background. Yeah. Yeah. But I think that that's something as parents that's really hard for us to do, especially if we went to school and we just learned facts mm-hmm. and we were looking for authority and things like that from going to school.
Yeah.
It's hard to let your kids see that you don't know an answer mm-hmm. or that things aren't perfect. But you know what? That's life and it's preparing them for life because yeah. I know my 4-year-old, he definitely wants things to be perfect the first time around. And we have to really focus with them that mm-hmm. mommy and daddy practice this for like a lot of years and we're a little better at it because of that. But look, we still make mistakes too. Yeah. We didn't come out at age 4 knowing this, you know? And so I think the kids don't see that and they just see the perfection in their parents mm-hmm. because I bet if you ask your kids how that pizza, like to talk about it again, I bet they had more fun than they thought. And it's a different memory.
Absolutely. And you're right. Their perspective on the whole episode would have been completely different to mine. I'm just, my explanation is through my lens, isn't it?
Yeah. And not through. And I would suggest on my end of how I try to make things a little easier for parents is I would do just toppings only with kids and buy flatbreads and make them. My son loves doing that. And mm-hmm. it only takes me like 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. I don't have that mess. And so it's like, you're not taking away the experience because they didn't make it themselves. Like there's this thing we have in our heads. Like I always want him to bake from scratch or like do these cookies like I did when I was a kid. But you know what? I probably drove my grandma nuts when we made cookies because I probably made a huge mess.
Yeah.
And I probably only helped for 5 minutes. And where if we have the cookies ready for him to frost and decorate, that's the fun part.
Yeah.
Or let him help in steps. It doesn't all have to be at once.
Yeah. I think also it's about being comfortable with what you enjoy as a parent, because as you just said, I'm not a baker. I don't bake. I'm not that interested in baking. So that therefore meant that the pizza making process was not natural to me. I'm not particularly passionate about it. So then it became a chore already. Whereas if I'd chosen together with them, if we'd chosen something that we were all passionate about together, which might not have been in the kitchen even, then the whole thing would have been much better experience for all. But I suppose it's that understanding that you don't have to be great at everything. You have to love everything, but just choose the things that you do enjoy doing and you'll start off on a bit of a better footing.
Exactly. That's definitely it. Because a lot of the stuff you want to teach your kids, you want them to become good people. You want them to learn certain things. You can do that in a lot of contexts. You can teach them science and math in whatever you want to do. Like, if you like baking, like I have a friend who loves to bake and her Facebook drives me nuts because there's this perfection. Her kid is like at the mixer and I just can't get him to do that. And it's like, because I don't like to do it.
Yeah, exactly.
But I like doing science experiments. Mm-hmm. And so I share that with him, or like, we like to garden and we do that. And so it's definitely that. Mm-hmm. So it's not shy away from things that you don't like to do. But you find, I hate the word hack, you find hacks to get it, but you find ways to simplify the task, to make it more enjoyable and still give it to your kids. So like during the pandemic, I bought, there are companies here that sold pre-made cookies and the icing and all that as a kit, and you can make cookies that way. Mm-hmm. Charlie loved that. That would be a good half hour and it was a treat. And then I didn't have to clean the kitchen. Yeah. It was amazing. And so it got forth the thing I wanted, which was the creativity part of it. It was enjoyable and nobody was upset. And it was like, if you find things like that, or like there's science kits, Mel Science, you've got Kiwi Crate. I'm not sure if you guys have Kiwi Crate in the UK. I think you do, because I feel like I did it with my son when we lived there. So you've got those, and they send you ready-made kits that take like half an hour, hour longer as they get older. And they're foolproof. And so not that we're fools, but if you don't like something, it's done for you. And all you have to do is help your kid read it. And so I think that if we all just take the convenience aspect that we use in other aspects of our lives, we could apply that to parenting a little and make it a little easier for all of us.
Yeah, I think, like you said, it's not about, we don't have to feel like we have to do absolutely everything from start to finish to educate them or to create a positive experience. It can be, like I said, finding a simpler way of doing something. So then actually gets done. That's the other thing. You make it too complicated and it doesn't actually get done or doesn't get finished. And sort of the outcome's not even there. So I think I love that simplification, definitely.
That's funny, because I'm now rethinking a few of the activities we did that I have sitting here half finished, and that's what it was. We did one, I still haven't published it as a series yet, but it's construction work. Mm-hmm. So like we're going to interview an architect, and I had found this styrofoam block set. And you can make your own buildings and you just glue it together. Yeah. And there were too many bricks. And my son was only, and the glue took forever to dry. And I'm sitting there like, this is awful. I hate this so much. but it's cool because it's for an older kid, they would have been really involved. Yeah. But it was all me. And I was like, no. And so it's still sitting in a box, and my son asks about it, like, when can we finish the building? And I kind of want to say, like, when you do it yourself.
Yeah, when you're about 11. To keep there for the next 6 years or so. So let's just, before we wrap up, let's just talk about your Instagram account quickly, because obviously that's where to find all this great inspiration we've been talking about today. I'm definitely going to go and check it out straight after this. So that, presumably, did that grow through lockdown, or were you already curating that kind of content beforehand?
So I had my book published in June of 2020, and my publicist started the account so that we could highlight the book. And it started with me doing an experiment and tying it to my book. Like, here, you could do this, you could do that. And people really liked the experiments. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to switch gears here and not make it just about my book. And I just turned it into let's learn about science. And it's also art. And because I mean, my son is four, we do a lot of crafts and stuff. So it's a little more than just science, but I always do tend to trend back towards science. And then it just grew during lockdown. I have 11.2 thousand followers now, and that just built over time. And then TikTok, I started that recently of trying to convert some material over, and that one really took off, and it has like 18,000. And so if they're just, they're parents who are looking for this stuff. And I want to tell you, there are lots of people who do stuff like what I do. I am not a unicorn. There are a lot of science communicators who post content for families or parenting experts. And if you're stuck and you're like, what do I do with my son or daughter because we got locked down, or my kid got sent home for a COVID contact quarantine, there's so much out there that you can do, and your kids and you will both enjoy it.
So what's your Instagram handle? Because that's the most important one for today's podcast, not anybody else's.
It's Let's Learn About Science. That is the same handle for TikTok and Instagram. And then my website is letslearnaboutscience.com. And ultimately, by the end of the year, I do hope to fully convert my Instagram account into a blog as well, of highlighting my themed weeks. At the moment, though, they're just connected by hashtag. But yeah.
Yeah, cool. And did you do, out of interest, this is more of a marketing question, did you just grow your audience on Instagram just organically, just by posting and posting? Or did you have any kind of marketing strategy behind it? Because there's so many people I talk to, especially mums moving into self-employment, trying to start Instagram accounts and trying to create some kind of engagement and audiences, and they just against fear of not knowing how to do it, I guess.
A lot of it was organic, of where I was just on Instagram all the time. It's now to the point where my husband will walk in and he'll see my phone out and he'll go, "Oh, we're TikToking." And I'm like, "Yep, I've got to build my audience." So there's the definite interactions, because then you build that the community that's always going to be there. Yeah. It's the people who are really your niche market. Mm-hmm. And I probably made the mistake of trying to get to 10,000 so I could have the swipe up button fast. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I did contests and I like entered pods and things like that to help me build. But that just got to be so much work of engaging all the time. And I didn't feel like I was really knowing anybody. And so I kind of scaled back on that. But yeah, there were definitely contests that I entered and there are like follow events and stuff like that. So did all that, but a lot of it was organic. My TikTok was entirely organic. Yeah. I had a video go viral and it just like one morning I woke up like, whoa. How do I replicate this? And I have not done it yet.
No, that's the thing. That's why it's such a dark art. Because one day you're up here, the next day it's down there. You think, oh, I know what you're doing. So Stephanie, thank you so much. It's been a great conversation. I'm feeling very inspired now because of the simplification word that you've used. So I feel better about going out there and finding things to do with the kids that we can all enjoy and not creating a sort of complex monster that causes a lot of pain and chaos and fighting. So that's much better. So you've already told us where to find you. So Instagram and your website, the first two places, is great. So I'm sure you'll get a lot more followers after this podcast. So thank you so much. And I think enjoy your trip to London soon. You told me you're going flying back for a bit. So that'd be good to come back.
Yes.
And happy birthday to your little boy too.
Yeah, thank you.
And we'll speak again soon. Thank you, Stephanie.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of The Parent Equation. And please remember to hit subscribe, and also it'd be great if you could leave a review. Thanks so much, and see you next time.